A guard waves Timur and me through the north gate of Hanbalik without question. Apparently, we don't seem like the sort of people who threaten the safety of the great Khan of the Mongol Empire, which is hilarious when you think about it. Timur Khan of the Kipchak Khanate isn't a threat to the great Khan? Really? Granted, Timur is the overthrown Khan of the Kipchak Khanate, and the great Khan's brother, Hulegu Ilkhan, is hunting him down like a dog. But still. My body sags with relief as we take our first steps inside the city. Again, the irony is not lost on me. Timur leans his great bulk too heavily on my bony shoulders as we walk. He needs to eat. So do I, for that matter. The constant need to eat also weighs too heavily on my bony shoulders. Maybe it's the fault of my empty stomach, but I suddenly remember in stunning detail the sight of Halaf crouched before me in the cart last autumn, holding out an apple, the instrument of my doom. That apple would taste fantastic right about now. But I have no apple or any other food for that matter, so I keep us moving. There's so much to see as we trudge ahead. Fine houses with red-winged rooftops, lush gardens, and a staggering number of silk-clad pedestrians. And since Timur and I have only one decent set of eyes between us, my own, it's up to me to search the faces around us on the street.
"Slow down, girl,"
Timur says. The hungrier he gets, the more he tries to mask it with rough authoritarianism. The hungrier I get, the more I want to yank him by the beard. It's not pretty, but there you have it. "We're never going to find him here," I say as I wipe a ticklish strand of hair out of my face. Even caked in sweat and dust, the baby fine wisps defy gravity.
"Don't be a pessimist. We'll find him,"
says the man who can't see. A year ago, I would not have dreamed of speaking so insolently to the Khan. But months of traveling in exile and deprivation by his side have bound us together in surprising ways. He may once have ruled over his own sprawling piece of the Mongol Empire, but from my perspective, he's just my grumpy old goat. He stops to glare at me, and while I know he can't see me clearly, I wither. Even gaunt and impoverished, the man has eyebrows that can command armies. It's his son I'm talking about here, and my, well, I'm not entirely sure what to call Halaf in relation to me, but it's big and important and much larger than my selfish irritability. I bow my head and say, "Sorry." Timur folds his arms. I roll my eyes and add, "My lord." He nods and lets me lead him again. As I'm calling him old goat in my mind for the thousandth time, he squeezes my shoulder and says,
"It'll be all right, little bird. Just keep looking."
My heart cramps as hard as my stomach. The streets of Hanbalik are wide enough for 7 horsemen to pass abreast, but I still feel penned in like a rabbit in a trap. As the sun wheels toward the western walls of the city, a constant low-grade worry eats at my insides. I'm pretty sure I'm going to die. I know, we all die, but my dying feels imminent. It's breathing down my neck like an eager, wet puppy. A sedan chair floats by on the shoulders of 6 slaves, its silk curtains as opalescently pink as a sunset. It reminds me of home, the way the elite rode through Lin'an in sedan chairs just like this when there was still a Song Empire and I lived in it. I stare after it longingly until a young man brushes past me, waking me from my reverie. He's humming a familiar tune under his breath. "Mo Li Hua, jasmine flower." I turn my head as he walks away, and my entire body freezes. It's Wei Ji. My brother's gait, his frame, even the rakish tilt of his black cap, the way his thick braid sways behind him, all of it as familiar to me as the song he's singing. I'm about to run after him, to shout his name, when Timur tugs my sleeve.
"What?"
he asks, hopeful.
"Is it him?"
I glance at Timur for an instant, just enough time for the boy who could not possibly be my brother to disappear into the crowd. Irrational disappointment weighs me down. heavier than Timur's thick arm.